Christy and Katrina at the DK 805 podcast. Today, we'll be discussing different coping mechanisms. Oh, I can't even say the word. Different coping mechanisms that we've
dealt with. Gets me all the time in one word or the other.
That we dealt with with our children as far as trying to help them through their addiction. Yeah. Some of it are on the lines of compassionate boundaries, tough love,
enabling,
all the different journeys that we've walked. Yeah. Katrina would like to start off with reading something.
Yeah. First to say there is no right or wrong way. How no one is prepared. There is no, there's no book you get. Like, we have all these books that we're reading through. I devour books. And I did all through the journey with, my Dylan, but there was no right or wrong. There was no way. It was one way it was like, okay, you do that. And then that doesn't work. So the,
baby books that we read.
Yes. It's like,
right. 3 years or something.
And in stage one, they're going to be toddling. In stage two,
we read all those baby books.
This is the road of addiction. It will be like, you get glimmers of like, they're on the other side of it and you're up on the top of the mountain. And the very next, within hours or with minutes, you could get that they've left. That chance is over for that time in terms of, just the highs and the lows, the roller coaster of, emotion. So, in all of it, so for me, that's why I wanted to have this subject, which is a really tough one for me, because I struggled a lot with, I don't like the word tough love. It's really difficult, because it was never tough love. It was really, really loving him so deeply that I wanted him to have his autonomy and to feel I was always loving him where he was at. Even in the most difficult moments, we always knew there was love. I mean, I knew he was, it was not him and his behaviors that was in those acting out moments. I knew it's just very difficult when you're in those moments, when there are active use, to remember that. So I was reactive. And if I could say anything, it would be that what I've learned now is that pausing, which I didn't have then as much as I could say I would have it now, that halting and before responding and reacting, because it was all reactiveness. It was like his behavior, me reacting. And that's where I feel like I had gone back in the early stages of grief, which I had so much pain, the sleepless nights I'd wake up with memories of like, why did I not just respond this way? And you can't go back. So when I would call when we knew Dylan needed treatment, and it wasn't a matter of that he would grow out of this, and you know, the markers aren't being met, things that are, you know, for themselves, jobs and feeling that your child, when he was in his early 20s is when his addiction, 20, 21, it wasn't, it wasn't clear before that he was, the smoking weed that was there, that was, cause he was a really heavy, active skateboarder. That was a part of that kind of that crowd. And he held himself together well, he had a girlfriend. So those things for us, it was shocking. I'm going to say it was shocking when, the active addiction really reared its head and it was like full force. And that was when he was in his 20s, he had moved away, and came home, and we were just like, it was really clear that something was really, really wrong. And so we immediately, and he came to me and he told me. And, so when you call, I called, the first treatment or the first place you call is they will tell you. And I think there's just work and reform that needs to be done in this, to not enable, to not give any money, so it was like, you will love them to death. And those things were being said. You get more like you're scared from like the start, but then add that to that. You're just like, you're listening to anything that's on the other phone because they're the professionals.
Well, I don't think the professionals were prepared for the opiate epidemic.
No.
And I think that the professionals at the time were, what they were going on is the tough love.
There's like a rock bottom that people can get to.
Rock bottom
and
step.
And that's there. And it, you know, there's levels, but it is with fentanyl. It is, you are, there's no more chances.
And sometimes people don't even have the opportunity to hit rock bottom.
Right.
Sometimes they're just trying uphill one time and they're not even an addict.
That is
that's the scary part of the fentanyl poisoning.
That's right.
And so with Devin, he did start out with weed and then he did jump to the opiates.
Yes.
And I was on top of it the whole way.
Right.
The entire time I was scared because I knew the history.
Right.
The genetic component. I saw it coming.
Yeah.
I had tried tough love with his older half-brother.
Yes.
I did the whole tough love route.
So you had that perspective of seeing that feeling.
Well, the tough love did nothing. It did not help. It led to, I still have guilt with the tough love and I often wonder if that child would have gone down another path. So with Devin, I was running scared.
Yeah.
So I tried to go down the, let's get the treatment early.
Yeah.
And
give him a different experience through it. But as you just shared, you know, would that have changed for his older stepbrother for you to have the understanding? What we do know is that that's why when we started this, like that's how I started with whatever you're trying and just knowing that we're just given the tools, but my son still passed, no matter that I turned every stone and tried every different way.
Well, one of the things I'd learned through this process of having children who struggle is that often the parents who have the more difficult children, they invest their whole entire life, their life savings, everything to save their child. Right. And often those parents are still shamed and judged. But those are the hardest working parents. If I had the children that just went through life and met the markers, I would like to believe I would have compassion. Mm. I don't know if I would be. So I always say that my children who have done all right in life have made me feel like a successful mom. Mm-hmm. But my ones that have struggled have made me a better person.
Well, that's just it. It's a personal journey. It doesn't discriminate. Addiction doesn't. It's not like, you know, you're a good mom, you're not. This is a personal journey. Whenever the person that starts with whatever open, that key they talk about unlocking for that person, that that like that warm blanket, that cover, that, you know, for whatever pain they're feeling, that's once that journey starts for the person, it is up to them to want to put that down. And that is just the truth. There is nothing short of being by their side, always letting them know they are loved, but you will not accept behaviors that had to be. We had healthy boundaries. We had to. And I know Dylan appreciated those because he soon started just telling me, like I said, the conversations began, you know, in all of our text messages, it would be, I'm asking for a certain thing. And, you know, again, and Dylan wasn't young at this point. He was in his 20s. So this was me trying to give him his autonomy. Like I said, giving him his ability to make his own choices that would give him his own self-esteem. And I, you know, as I was reading and understanding, but so the text messages are very, very telling in that, because when I would ask him, I want to see you. I want to be with you today. Can you just be in a state where we can be present together, sober? He would let me know very clearly whether that was something he could do or didn't want to do. And I just would take any opportunity always to do that, to reach out and be there. But it was his life. And he also, I mean, again, we're talking about a young man in his 20s that they don't always want to be with their mom. So again, he was seeking his own journey. And in that, it wasn't what I would, you know, you think about that. That's a part of being a mom that you have to okay, I'm like letting you go and fly.
Well, it's the only illness that as a parent, you have to run from your child at times.
Right.
With other illnesses, you run towards your children.
Right.
And there's not
Well, when they're in denial,
any,
there's not, yeah.
Well, and there's, I don't know any other illness that you get so shut out, and you sometimes, whether it be cancer, I've watched different journeys with different family members with their illnesses as well. And so there is a support team to help encourage. They have compassion from the outside world. Those that struggle with addictions or SQD, substance abuse disorder, they're often labeled and turned away from. If you saw somebody out on the street that was bald or a young child, a 14-year-old, 15-year-old out on the street who was bald and going through cancer treatment, so you could see the port in their neck, there would be instant compassion. How often you don't take people with a cancer and you don't exploit them on Facebook. And how often do people laugh at those struggling?
Well, it's like the, it's just this lack is again, there's, it's, I feel like that, you know, again, there's still that stigma, which we're trying to break, which is that, you know, again, it is a disease and it does take over the brain. And once it's there, it's such work to unwrap, like I said, the work, to have it be something that, and it's continual work. Once you're in recovery, it's work. I mean, we've met so many people now that are in, active recovery that share the work. It's every day.
Well, it's, for us, it's every day. I'm in active recovery. And I don't have
We'll explain that because you're not in active addiction recovery, but you are in recovery.
From the loss of my son. And my son. And what you're told often is your child's your addiction. Well, how can they not be? I mean, how can my child not be.
There's a really healthy community that, so again, I'm not like either just saying one or the other. And when I'm not advocating for anyone to make, everyone needs to make their own choices. But ones I came across that you can find on social media, there's Compassionate Friends, and that's for when you're in grief. That can be done on Zoom. Then there is for when you're in addiction and you're helping your child, there is a group called the Thrive Foundation, you know, the Thrive. And Thrive, if you look that up, is where you are working within just always loving them where they're at, which is where I was. I can, you know, with my Dylan and any mother, you always do. You have to set, you know, sometimes the harder set boundaries. But Thrive is so it's called the CRAFT method, and that is where you know there's, and I won't even go through trying to without my notes. But just if you're looking for ways or tools that have other parents that are working different ways, besides just the tough love or the rock bottom, because as I'm trying to express here, and I hope I'm not offending anyone by saying so, but I have just through my own experience, knowing that that would be, that's the hardest thing to look back on to say, was I too hard? Was I too hard? When you're hearing you have to be hard and tough love. Because now with the fentanyl, that does not, there is no, it takes it away. There's so much I can just say, I would to save another mother from feeling regret over not looking at these other, methods, to seek all methods so you can, it's just,
well, we need to be kind of,
the kindness to yourself.
Well, it's kind to ourselves as well, because as parents, I know you did everything. I know I did everything. If my child, if I could have changed places with my child, I would have. And I told him that often, also feeling guilty of, then that would have hurt all my children.
And he would never have wanted you to change places.
He would never. No. I told him that the night before he passed away, I want to take your illness from you. And he's like, Mom, no, you don't. You don't want this. Mm-mm. And we had.
Let's talk about, so those, you know, the pains that both our boys experienced. And I think it's so similar for a lot of the younger people that were when they first, again, it's, you know, early childhood traumas, and then just being able to, you know, feel like they can't express those things. That's hard, especially for young men. But, you know, for again, I mean, it's young women. It doesn't discriminate with sex, for sure. It's male, female, but for young boys, and you're their mother, it's definitely like, it's hard to share those things that were really hurting them. The things that I know now, which are Dylan's, his early trauma triggers, But for one, a big one for young people is like losing a girlfriend, losing a boyfriend, having that young first love being and then being lost. Or and then I know for Dylan, when COVID hit, Dylan did pass, May 22, 2022. COVID was already in full, almost on the other side. But COVID was just awful, so awful with the isolation and the loneliness and then the fear and anxiety. Yes.
I just recently started reading a book on it. Mm-hmm. I can only read it in chunks.
Yeah.
Because I get so overwhelmed at how so many deaths could have been prevented.
So
and
many.
That does include, the opiate epidemic. And if you, I would encourage everybody to read Dope Sick or just do your own research if you're out there. If you're out there pointing a finger or you're out there thinking it's a choice, I strongly encourage you to see how, honestly, I feel like it's programmed. It's not accidental we're here.
Yeah. No, it is. It's
people
a very,
don't have to agree with me, but before you come I at think me, be, do
before,
your research.
Before it's said and done, I think that we will be. We're on the side of it where we're, because so much work now is being done, and there are all these moms that have done the work with the one pill for their child. They didn't have an addiction and they were reaching for something to help with anxiety or help
be accepted.
I think a lot of times more they're trying to find a way for anxiety or they're reaching for that pill. But it's, there are those mothers that have had that experience. They could take it to the White House. We have seen so much change. I have. When my early stages were like, why was this happening? Why was it allowed? Why was this fentanyl, this poison being allowed, to be pouring into the country when other countries weren't experiencing this? This is an epidemic for the United States mostly. There is some in other, but this is mostly so that is being brought to light. The DEA has done amazing work. There is a huge fentanyl wall. If your child has passed from fentanyl. I did send my picture of Dylan is on the fentanyl wall. And that wall is way too big to even concept, but they have acknowledged it in the White House.
The wall's too big now that they can't even, they can't
it's,
add
it's
people
a waiting
now.
List on the computer.
Well, now it's on the computer.
Right. It's you can actually go onto the DEA fentanyl wall and you can scroll through I don't recommend that for anyone in early stages of grief, but I have done that and you're not alone, but my prayers are just, it's constant. I wake up thinking about it. What can I do? I go to sleep. But I do know that, there's so much work to be done, but we're like in this stage where we are seeing, changes being made where there's
changes
so many
being
yes.
made. And one of the things yes. I need to acknowledge.
There's Walk for Lives. There's Shatterproof. There are all these amazing, amazing people doing these gatherings that are getting people to, large walks that make a difference that, are going to make change.
Well, and the other thing I need to acknowledge as well is how tirelessly the police departments go after the drug cartels and drug dealers
and
these often are people with families of their own and the hard, the detail of their job, how taxing it must be on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful for those that fight in ways I can't.
This last month, there has been three large seizures in this area, the 805 in Oxnard and in Simi Valley. I believe there was two in the 805, which is Oxnard and Simi Valley. And they will, in the local news, they will now post the pictures. There's guns, there's pounds of fentanyl. It's not just like, it's unbelievable what they're seizing in homes still that are, but they're getting these large, that's lives saved.
It's lives saved. And it's some of those articles it's too close for me.
I know.
So I can't read it. I encourage people to do the research. Mm-hmm. But when I say that, I pick it up. I've turned on the series Dope Sick. I've turned it off. Mm-hmm. I pick up the book. I read different books on the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. I put it down because the most important thing to do is protect our hearts, surround ourselves. But I was once a naive person. I once was under the impression. Not my family, not my child. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
I know more now about, I would say, this whole, I mean, again, in ways that I do hope will help people, but it's the things you don't want to know, but we need to know. We need to share. We need to know as a community. We need to speak out. We need to reach out to recover. There is, like I said, there's so many resources. There's so many podcasts. Podcasts are what we're doing. You can put it on in your travels when you're in the car. There's and that was something I had shared with Christy just recently. We were talking about, you know, as each one we do try to plan that will be helpful for those watching, but and or listening, because we do have the podcasts that are on Apple and Spotify, which are just to be heard. These are on YouTube. And so in that there are, I looked up, I just wanted to, you know, so again, not just ours, and hopefully you find whatever resonates for you, because we just want you to find help. But I looked up, you know, mothers who lost sons doing podcast. There are probably three or four that I found that were being interviewed that had connected through their loss, but also through support. And now they're their tribe. Now they have that, but they have different missions. They're different. Maybe they're not doing podcasts like we have, but they are they're doing like the Love is Free Foundation. They're doing marches up by at Griffith Park, which is a shatterproof walk, but they're coming together and they are, they're just so many. There's so many.
Well, and one of the ways I cope with Devin's passing is, as much as I felt I wanted him to recover, I feel like it's my responsibility to recover as well. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do a disservice to my son with his passing.
Right.
By allowing him to pass and not help or save another. Help or save another family.
Absolutely. And that's what this is about. This is not
too easy. Too many. And if I can reach my hand out and just help one, that one can help one. And so that's why Katrina and I are here. We're here because we don't want you to be on this side of.
And we're so sorry if you are. And that's why we share all this information. And if anything we've shared, we will put it on our resource page. We are adding that as we go. We're coming across what resonates with us and what will resonate with you. I pray you find what does. And we're here for you. We do receive your messages, and we're trying to touch on those points that of topics. But
and honor your loved ones by healing.
Yes, and
when you're going out and enjoying those sunsets,
that's right.
Honor them.
That's right.
And honor them, because
those signs.
Yeah, you do them a disservice, and you do your neighbors a disservice. We need everyone.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us today at the DK 805 podcast. Please reach out to us. We truly appreciate all your support.
Thank you.
We love you.
We love you.